for you to see what our state's public policy is with respect to open meetings, why we are obligated to make our business open to the public. Really understand it, we need to know what a meeting is. A meeting will be something that satisfies two requirements, namely a purpose to engage in governmental business and enough members of this body present to determine the course of action for the body. I'm going to try to boil it down to five things to know about open meetings law. First, meetings must be properly noticed. So you've all got a copy of the agenda that went out. This is something that's done at least 24 hours in advance of a meeting and provides the public and the media with information about where the meeting will take place, what time it will take place, and reasonably alert any interested people about what subject matters will be covered. If there's going to be a closed session, which I think will be more unlikely for this body than with others, you should confer with legal counsel so that we can help you provide the right notice and sufficient detail. One thing to really take away from tonight is that when you meet, you should not talk about matters and should not allow public comment on matters that were not properly noticed. And again, that goes to providing the public with the opportunity to know what's on tap and come and attend if they're interested. Second point, meetings must be open to the public, held in a reasonably accessible location with the doors open. The public can audio or video record meetings or take photographs, so long as doing so does not interfere with your conducting the meeting. Public comment is not required at every meeting, but if you choose to invite public comment, my recommendation is that it be included on the notice that comment will be allowed, and also include any limitations. If you're going to limit speakers to 2 minutes or 3 minutes apiece, that's good information to provide right in the notice. As for closed session, there are only limited exceptions that will apply to allow closed session, and again, that's something that we should work together on if you believe you'll need to go into closed session. Third point about meetings, votes must be recorded, generally done in open session, and not done by a secret ballot. You have staff to help you with recording and maintaining records of votes at meetings. Okay, this one's important. Not all meetings for public meeting or open meetings law purposes occur in person. You have 11 members. 6 members are needed for a quorum in order to meet, and that means 4 are needed to take or block any action. If you think of the traditional meeting gathering in one place like you're here tonight, that's not the only time that you may be conducting a meeting of the task force. If you have a telephone conference call and enough members are on it and you're conducting business related to long-term planning for the domes, that can constitute a meeting. Another thing to be mindful of is reply all email communications. If it gets into the kind of rapid-fire exchange that you would have on a telephone conference or in person, that may constitute a meeting as well. Let's talk a little bit about walking quorums. These are a series of gatherings among separate members, each group being less than that quorum of 6, in which you agree either explicitly or tacitly to act in a certain way that would determine a course of action. That would be a walking quorum. The essential feature is that agreement to act in a certain way. Your discussion and decision-making should take place in open meetings rather than in these types of walking quorums. But take comfort, not everything is a meeting. We do have a presumption if one half or more of you are present in a certain place, it may be presumed to be a meeting, but it does not extend to chance meetings, social gatherings. If you're at a block party, a birthday party, and you're there in numbers, that would not necessarily constitute a meeting. My recommendation to you is to notify your chairperson if you're planning to attend certain types of events. Something related to the domes, you're going to a historical lecture or a presentation not being run by this task force, not being run by the county, or anything where you know more than half of you will be present. definition of a record, the key thing I think to take away from the definition is that a record is something that was created or kept in connection with the official purpose or function of the task force. So not everything that you touch will become a public record. It has to have that connection to the long-term planning for the domes. Okay, so what is a record? It's very much a content-driven determination. It's not format or location or media-driven. Something that you maintain on your personal computer or in your home office may still be a record if it meets the definition of something related to the official function of this body. It's not limited to just records created by the task force. Things you receive and keep as part of your work may also qualify as public records. Here are some examples of what is not a record. Drafts. Something that is in a preliminary state, something that you're working on personally and not sharing with others, may fall within one of the exemptions to the records law. Simply labeling something a draft will not protect it from disclosure. Notes is another type of exception. So something, if you took notes here tonight and you maintain them for your own use to refresh your recollection, to keep tabs on what you were supposed to do and follow up to this meeting, that's not a record. If you begin to share it with others or you use it as an official record of this meeting, it may take on a different character and become a public record. Purely personal records are not public records. Your email wishing someone a happy birthday is not a public record simply because it's another member of the task force. And then there are a couple other exemptions listed here. So we're going to go through 10 things to know about the task force record. We should presume that public access is allowed. But this doesn't mean that it's absolute. There will be circumstances where you have a record and it's related to the official business of the task force, and yet it is still not accessible to the public. The chairperson is going to be the custodian of your task force records, and any records requests that come in, if you receive them, make sure the chair is notified, share that records request with the chairperson. Records requests can come in lots of different formats, including orally. They do not have to come with an explanation of the reason for the records request, and no special forms or magic words are required in order for the public to ask for a record. Records requests seek existing records, so your body does not have to create a record to answer a request. You don't have to answer questions of general interest, though you may. And it applies only to those records that exist at the time, so you can't really fairly be asked to provide a set of records every month for all time. It's what exists at the time the request is made. Custodians must respond to records requests and should provide any denials or partial denials of records in writing along with appeal rights. The standard in our law for the timeline to respond is as soon as practicable and without delay, which takes on different meanings depending on the circumstances. The AG advises 10 days for a really simple, straightforward request that doesn't require a lot of location or redaction work, but it may take longer if there's something that needs a lot of research or careful redaction. Best practice is to let a requester know what the status of their request is as you work on things. Okay, so this is kind of the overview of how to evaluate a records request. You start with, is there a responsive record? If there is, then you'll ask, is there an absolute right of access to the record? If there is, you provide the records. If there's not, you continue through the evaluation